Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts as they share with you the insider's guide to property investing.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, your insider's guide to property investing. I'm Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's The Lifestyle Channel. And he's Ben Kingsley, the chair of the Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the current Property Investment Advisor of the Year. How are you, mate?
Good, Bryce, really well. Yep, no, on fire.
On fire. And now we should let the listeners know that last night you launched a very special tool that's been close to your heart. It's been in the wings. It's been in the waiting. You've visualised it probably for 20 years now.
Yes.
But it's finally happened.
My life's work. I was trying to tell someone what it was. It was, there's a Richard Dreyfuss movie out there called, Opus something or other, where it's like his final piece of music that he puts together. Well, this is
this is your opus.
Yeah, this is my opus. It's everything that I wanted it to be in terms of, and we're still building it, mind you, but it's about, you know, for many, many years, we've been successful in identifying areas and buying great properties for clients in those areas. But it's all been anecdotal and it's been researched well, but we've all sat around and talked about areas that we wanted to buy and we've judged each other and challenged each other. It's exactly the way it should be. But what I'm trying to do is get the science to a granular level around property type by number of bedrooms by suburb and look at the performance in that sort of granular state to get the best results. So it's about, what we've always talked about, which is borderless investing. So it's, we invest in property for a return. Mm. Yes, it might be nice that it's bricks and mortar and it's tangible and so forth, but ultimately it's about the return on investment and not a percentage return, because you can't live on the percentages. You live on the dollar value that it generates, whether it be the capital growth or the yield value. So from that point of view, this has been a phenomenal piece of technology, and it's a really great platform, and we're using geospatial technology, and obviously, where we want to take it is through machine learning. So with so much data, we've got over 10 million data points, and we're basically growing that at about 500,000 data points a month now. So incredible amounts of data. And because we can measure distances and we can look at historical performances, we can do fantastic regression analysis. We can do some alignments around correlations and how strong those correlations are to driving value. So in other words, if value is the constant, what is it that's been influencing that in regards to that type of thing? So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's everything I want it to be, and hopefully for those listeners, we'll give some,
give them a sneak peek
in a couple of weeks' time.
Exactly,
and that's what we did to our clients last night at our opening of our offices in Melbourne here.
Yeah, and that's a real credit to you for the benefit of the listeners who aren't familiar with the financial services space. In the financial planning space, they actually have research houses, and they've had years and years of perfecting. If someone wants to actually get a new product that they want to get onto the market, it has to go onto the approved product list. But in property investment, it's not. I don't really have that. So it'd be fair to say you probably have a little bit of jealousy around that industry that they have these awesome research houses, and you're trying to think, well, in the property space, how can I create one, because it doesn't exist prior?
Correct. And the reason why it didn't exist prior is because the data wasn't so transparent or available, and it still unfortunately isn't to the general public. Yes, there are means in which you can collect it, but if you wanted to look at over 15,000 suburbs across Australia and do it at a lightning speed where you can make a determination in a couple of hours, it was near impossible. So with our great friends at CoreLogic RP Data, we've gone off and bought a lot of that data. So we've paid, tens of thousands of dollars to get our baseline data, and now we're analysing that and collecting more data and putting in the variables that we think are the variables that do influence value. Mm. So both the human interest and human behaviour stuff that we've talked about. So really, yep, if I'm studying an equities, I can see there's a lot of transparency around a public listed company. They give all the data out and everyone can analyse it. So we're going to see property move down that space over the course of the next sort of 5 or 10 years, and I think we're at the forefront of that.
Mate, you use some really big words there. The only big word I know is delicatessen, but you use,
I think you've used that before.
Geospatial awareness. You've talked about regression analysis in its simplistic form without using big words.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean to a property investor? From what, if you can do what you're wanting to do, what does that mean?
Well, geospatial basically just means that we can look from a sort of a bird's eye distance at a location, so we can identify a single dwelling and we can correlate its relationship with, say, the train station or the main freeway or the CBD, so its central business district. Because one of the big things that we're seeing here is, and everyone needs to understand, demand is driven by human profiling. So it basically means that it's the human beings, we're the ones that create it. Like, property is shelter, it's an essential need. But when it comes to value, the value is driven by effectively, you know, supply, demand, and the equilibrium, you know, so price versus quality. So what we're sort of talking about there is, if people have to travel quicker to work, will they pay a premium to do that? Will they pay a premium for the lifestyle amenity in the area or the learning amenity in the area, such as the education facilities for their kids? And we know anecdotal that that works. We just want to basically get the real science in behind that. And we want to wash out the variables that most people might think influence value when technically they don't. So, and when we talk about correlation coefficients, what we're basically talking about is, through a mathematical algorithm, we can work out if the value is close to one, it means there's a very strong relationship between the two variables that you're measuring. So that's, you know, that's the fancy talk for effectively measuring distance and time and value, and then putting it into you know, into something that gives us a result. And we want to see it a consistent result across the areas that we study, and just makes it difficult because we've got 15,000 suburbs and 5.6 million dwellings. So that's what makes it challenging, but that's the best part about the whole thing.
Residential real estate is by far the largest asset class in this country, so it's well worth the effort. But the frustrating thing too is, if you're in a big city like Melbourne or Sydney, where they do place a value on being close to public transport because of the density, it doesn't necessarily translate to Adelaide or Darwin, where they don't place the same value on being close to public transport. So I guess the things that you're doing can help. Well, it sort of goes back to that point that Australia is not just one big market.
Correct.
And it gives you the tool to have leading indicators rather than lag indicators,
yeah,
to know exactly which market to be in.
I think you've nailed it. These are leading indicators. It's about timing the market so you get the uplift early. And I think if we can get that science right, because there's some suburbs that we've always said to our clients, just get in. And the longer you stay in, the best result will be. But we're getting better at the analysis. Mm. And so it's now, yes, it is a great suburb, but it's already had a good run. So let's go to the suburb that's going to have, or the location around Australia that's going to have that and become the best at what we can be. So there's 100,000 uplift earlier than just sort of getting the historical uplift of the area.
There you go, listeners. We will find a way in the next couple of weeks for you guys to have a sneak peek of that. It was only launched last night, so stay tuned, stay listening. We'll definitely put that up on the Property Couch at some stage in the next sort of 2 to 3 weeks, so you can have a bit of a look at that. But last week we left the podcast, Ben, talking about the fact that you're about to go to a board meeting the following day. I thought it was a long lunch. You said you're actually doing real business.
We did real business.
to talk about, among other things, the topic, or the debate, around negative gearing. Now, I've obviously since had a chat with you prior to that, and there's still some information that needs to come from PIPAS, but you've got some of your own views, I've got some of my own views, and I guess for the benefit of the listeners, we want to really address the topic when people just see negative gearing as a real negative headline, rather than seeing some of the positive things. So we thought we might spend the next sort of 10, 15 minutes chatting about that.
Yeah. So what PIPA's going to do is release anything between 5 and 10 facts about negative gearing. So I don't want to steal that thunder because it hasn't been made public yet. And that's obviously the position of the association, it's the position of the board. So we'll wait for that to become public, and I'm sure we'll revisit this topic at another time. So what I wanted to talk about today was just my personal views, and again, not the views of the association, but my personal views in sort of understanding what it is. So I think to help the listeners, and this is all about education, is what is negative gearing? So it's a phrase that people have used whereby when you actually use borrowed money in a business sense, you're able to make that tax deductible. So the big thing is, and what we need to understand, all listeners need to understand, it's not exclusive to property. So it's in the fabric of our taxation system, and it has been. In fact, this is the 100th anniversary of our tax system. So it basically means if you're going into the business of whatever you're doing and you have some borrowings associated with that, well, those borrowing expenses can be classed as an expense, pure and simple. So when it comes to that, we need to understand that. Now, what does it mean from a property point of view? It means that if we borrow money to buy a property and that property generates rental income, but that rental income is not as much as the value that we're receiving, the cost that we're paying in terms of the interest and the holding cost of the property, then the property is running at a loss.
So 80 cents worth of income, a dollar worth of expenses, you're running a 20 cent loss magnified, but whatever the number.
Correct. And so during that tax year, you're able to deduct that against any other income that you're generating in the household, whether it be POYG or through your business. Mm. So what's important to understand this from my point of view is the concept is, would you go into a business to run at a loss?
Not long term.
No, of course you wouldn't. So this concept around negative gearing and that it, you know, people do it for the long term is absolute rubbish. I mean, ultimately what we want to be doing is eventually the property is going to become positively geared, which means it's, you know, our income is going to drive higher than our costs and we're going to live off that passive income. And that's what, you know, obviously we're passionate about. Now, yeah, look, there are some deductions that we can also get as part of property, just like any building or, you know, if we buy a photocopier for a business, we can get a deduction program or a depreciation schedule on that. And that's what happens also in property. So there's some things that we can depreciate. And again, in the fabric of our taxation system. So
can we labour on that point that you just said, that at some point in time, the property goes positive? And I think that's often forgotten in the argument when people are saying negative gearing should be abolished, because we'll unpack some of the reasons why that isn't such a good idea. But we've got to remember that not all properties stay negative forever. They move to a point where they reach break even or equilibrium, and then they move into positive territory where that now becomes a form of revenue that the government gets a revenue base from. So it's not forever this loss-making venture that just goes into the never-never.
So the reason why it's hitting the public arena is twofold. So first one, for some people, they're arguing that it affects affordability, okay? So, and then the other reason is that there's around, I think it's $9 to $11 billion, they're saying, is tax revenue losses. Now, the government is looking for ways in which it can regain that tax revenue. Now, interestingly enough, one of the board members, Nicola from API Magazine, raised a really, really great point. For cars, the incentives that are offered for cars in terms of fringe benefits, you know, that was reversed, that's $11 billion a year. In terms of tax revenues that are lost. So if you're going to make an argument about one topic over another, then, you know, that's my view. And I take the view of when the property is sold, if it is eventually sold, then you're going to see obviously a very large capital gain occur, and the government's going to get the tax revenue there. Now, and also, you know, for our clients, our Nirvana models are that they never sell the properties. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these properties should be delivering $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 in passive income a year. Well, that's taxable, you know. So from that point of view, don't take a short-term view. Take a long-term view when you look at this type of concept. And the changes is what worries me. If there was a change introduced, that's when we're going to see some challenges.
Yeah, you pull negative gearing out of the marketplace, less investors, less transactions, less stamp duty that the government is taking as well. So it's a really simplistic model. I mean, to just say, let's blanket get rid of it, because we deal with property investors all the time. Now, I can honestly say that we're talking to middle-income Australians a lot of the time. Mm. You know, we're not talking to people high net worths all the time. We do have high net worth clients.
Yep.
But generally speaking, ordinary, everyday Australians who are looking for an opportunity to get ahead. And in my view, anyone who's got a material income looks to park their money in residential real estate. So first, in terms of their principal place of residence.
Yep.
So in my view, it's arguably Australia's greatest wealth creator.
Mm.
But I think it's not just the politicians and the, you know, the packers and the people who make headlines of having lots of money. It's everyday Australians that are doing it. So we take it away, we're going to impact more lives for the ordinary Australian than we are the richest Australian.
Bryce, this is the biggest point for me. Imagine if you did introduce something and the consequence of that might be that that you think you're making property more affordable. Well, we all know that around 70% of property is owned by individuals who have it as their owner-occupied residence. Imagine if you said to those individuals, your value of your net worth is going to drop by 10% at the stroke of a pen.
Mm.
Now, how would they feel about the fact that they're going to be penalised for a decision that's being made to try and impact on 30% of the marketplace, or in this case, between, we think it's around 1.8 to 2 million, and we hope the tax office will give us some updates from the 2011 numbers soon. But let's say it's 2 million property investors, and we absolutely know that they're not high net worth people. Their average mum and dad's income's around 80,000 or thereabouts. So we know that. But these are the points I'm trying to highlight. I'm not trying to just get into the negative gearing camp and argue the point. And yes, of course I have a bias, but I do want to say, there's two things you made mention of. The state government gets the stamp duty revenue. Now, if that stamp duty revenue is null and void, or it's reduced, and that money is so important, I mean, just need to see how much revenue it raised in New South Wales and Victoria last year. It's, I think, and don't quote me on this, but I think it is the third or fourth main source of revenue to run the states. And when you've got that type of number, and I think there's a little grab from one of the papers recently, we'll put it up on the website in terms of Victoria. That's an important one, where it talks about, it's I think it's number two behind payroll tax in terms of outside GST. So if the state governments lose that revenue, where do they go to actually get that revenue? It's going to be either in more pay write-offs, but the big one is going to be higher GST.
And the problem with GST is a regressive tax. So it actually benefits the wealthy, because as a percentage of their income, the GST tax increase is much less compared to the poor old person who's struggling. It's got to be seen in the context of what impact it would have on a flow on, rather than just saying, let's just blanket get rid of it.
Correct. And look, I mean, some people argue the regressive tax. I also argue that usually high net worth people actually spend more and they buy higher quality goods, and so they're probably paying their share. So I'm talking about the basket of
goods.
And there are other ways. I mean, you know, I don't want this to be a story, but from that point of view, it's more around, okay, if we don't get that revenue, we need that baseline revenue, where it's going to come from. Same with council. So imagine if it had an impact on council rates around, because they base their rate system off land values. Now, what it'll mean is they'll just have to change their percentages and models and how they do it, because there's no unknown councils can also run their outfit. So again, a decision for 30% is going to affect 100% of the economy. And 100% of homeowners and 100% of people who live in those locations. So I do worry about just looking at it in isolation from a tax revenue point of view. But let's talk about the affordability side. So what are your views on that, Bryce?
Well, I think that if you... I wanted to say before that they actually did it in 83. They took it away. Took the rules away in the how
83 or 85.
No, they brought it back in 85.
That's right.
And they gave an incentive in depreciation to entice people back in. But what it meant, it was all the investors left the market in droves, and it just meant that the government was left holding the baby, trying to provide all this housing, which means, again, feeds into what you said before about they've got to look for this money to find it. So the gold of what you just said then was, be careful to not make a decision around the 30% that will ultimately affect the 100%.
Well, there was a Senate inquiry just recently, and the conclusion of that Senate inquiry is, did they know whether property investing and negative gearing affected house prices, and how would it affect affordability? And Treasury came back and said, we simply don't know. And it comes back to exactly what we were talking about there. How would they know? Because what could happen is, with social media now, there could all property investors, you know, landlords could all converge and set up an association. And like any business that we're in, if those costs were incurred on us, you usually pass them on. So you could see a lot more, you know, rents, you know, and everyone can communicate a lot easier through a Facebook group or whatever it may be, a LinkedIn group. And so all of a sudden, that's the risk. So how does Treasury model that impact? So I'm sort of saying, let the status quo be the status quo, get confidence in the marketplace, and let's look at ways in which we can make other affordability measures to help people get into the marketplace. Because we know for a fact that inner city locations, when we're talking about houses and small developments, there won't be an impact on those. Affordability won't change. So for all those people who are thinking that they're now going to be able to afford to buy closer to town, they're simply not true. You know, those buyers are always buying on emotion. They're not going to be buying on, you know, the numbers. So where it is going to affect it is the house and land package buyers and the people who have bought off the plan medium and high density apartments, because, and they are traditionally, there's a fair bit of investor activity in that marketplace at the moment. And as we've documented, there's going to be a lot of challenges in terms of those people making money, just generally speaking, because they, supply side can be influenced very quickly, and they're buying out in areas where there's lower incomes. So, the government, who don't want to affect your first home buyer or your mum and dads who live out wide, who are potentially penalised from convenience and all that, well, this decision would, because it's going to drop the price value out there significantly, and it's not going to impact the demand for a single fronted terrace home in Middle Park, or a beautiful sort of Californian bungalow, or a nice sort of one bedroom, two bedroom apartment in Bondi. It just will not change the value of those properties. So we've got to understand those consequences before, and I think the governments have got it right. They're sort of saying, we think it's part, Liberal are saying, we're not going to look at it, because they really don't know the consequences. And because they did do it last time, there was obviously rents that raised, but I think that would be even more so if they tried it again this time.
You've got to remember too that the politicians are generally speaking negative gearing themselves as well. So they're the decision makers making decisions on something that they're doing themselves. It's always an interesting argument. But ultimately, it just comes down to what we've been talking about in this podcast all along, and that's investment stock doesn't mean it's investment grade. And in the past, when all you had to do was put your name on a title and wait for the rising tide to lift all ships, we're actually suggesting that that's not going to happen. So what you've just said even further reinforces the fact that if something did happen that we were talking about, the asset selection becomes uber critical rather than just being critical. And so it really just does come down to making the right decision on which property to buy.
Yeah, and so let's unpack it, that final stage. It's been introduced. So this is a hypothetical. It's been introduced. So all of a sudden now, who's going to provide the rental stock for people who want to live closer to town? Oh, back on the government's shoulders. So we know for through historical records of state governments running public housing, oh my God, it's expensive. It's billions and billions of dollars, but not just in initial providing of the stock. It's the general upkeep of that stock. I mean, the tenders that go out for the replenishment of bathrooms and kitchens, and unfortunately the care that's taken. And we know that when it is a government-run asset, the love and attention and what's looked after. So what we do love about the whole ecosystem of property is we've got really strong property managers who are keeping an eye, doing regular inspections. They can't do that. So the blowout in terms of cost for government, state governments to run housing, when effectively there's a clear mechanism that's working well now, where we as investors are providing this housing for those people. Now, there might be some people listening to say, well, you're also stopping us from getting in. Don't be silly. I mean, there's competition on all of the good stock that always comes to market. So just think that it's just investors who are blowing up prices is simply wrong. And those areas where they are getting blown up out wide, well, they'll correct.
So there's a good case for it being good social policy then, because if you're getting investors, roughly speaking, 30% of a development and owner occupiers, 70%, it means that the appeal of the suburb, the surrounding areas, we don't get sort of these ghettos.
Correct.
That existed, and the government did toy with those in the 60s and 70s, and they saw that.
And there's been failures, Macquarie Fields is a perfect example where we've seen that. And exactly. I just think we're more efficient. If you give it to the public to run, we're a lot more efficient than way governments can be. So again, I just worry about the consequences and really thinking through policy to make sure that they get it right. And again, these are my personal views. They're not the views of my position as Pippa. They're just my own observations of being doing this for 20 years.
There you go, folks. You can obviously see it's a very passionate topic about Ben. He's been passionate about all his views. I'm sure there were some very thick discussions that happened at the board meeting. We look forward to that paper being released shortly. I just wanted to say in closing about this, I remember when I lived in Perth, I got about 13 hours into my pilot's license, and I remember one of the guys that I was doing the learning with, he said, look, I'm interested in buying one of these little Cessnas. It was about $85,000 to buy this plane at the time. I said, you're mad. You just go along and you maybe fly twice a week and it's just going to be sitting there. And he goes, I'm actually on a negative gear, the Cessna. because I'm going to bring the plane, I'm going to throw it into the pool at Jandakot Airport and let them use it. I'll earn an income.
It's a business.
And it's a business. So yeah. Just so you know, as Ben said at the top of the podcast, that negative gearing isn't just the domain of property. It's someone who has a business seeking venture can do it. Yeah. Of course, that's probably questionable whether the Cessna was going to go up in value. So maybe not.
Running a loss is not good.
Not the best investment.
I mean, you know, people do it on coins. They do it on artwork. They do it on shares. So, you know, it's just, again, it's the fabric of our tax system. So I don't like the fact that, you know, it's being pushed out into quick gaining political capital grounds for frustrated buyers. Mm. The reality is Sydney, yep, it's had a great run, but it's, you know, in the last 10 years prior to this run, it was 6 out of 7 in terms of worst performing states. And so everyone's arguing that it's negative gearing and property investors are pretty, no, it's just the cycle. Mm. And people who don't know property well enough don't understand that. So, you know, they'll need to get their head around that.
This too shall pass is probably the point there. Now, as we close today's podcast, I just wanted to say a big shout out to people that are giving us some really great feedback about our podcast. We're really enjoying doing it. It's a good chance for Ben and I to catch up at the end of the week and have a chinwag about something we love doing. We just had a thought that if you are loving it, if you're a financial planner or an accountant or a property manager, anyone involved with investors of some sort, and you're interested in getting some links to our podcast on your newsletters that you send out to your team or through your client base, just send us an email. Ivis, who helps us put the Property Couch together, if you go info@propertycouch.com.au, send her a little note and she'll give you a media kit just to help you get that into your newsletter very, very easily so that you can send it out to your clients, to your centres of influence. Also, for the last couple of weeks, we've been asking for a favour. We're really keen to win the Investor's Choice Award regarding the mentoring category. So if you get a chance to go to thepropertycouch.com.au and go and vote for Ben and I via the Property Couch for that award, we'd very, very much appreciate it. It gives us a chance to get this out to many more people throughout the upcoming months and the upcoming years. And that's the closing date is the 31st of July. So that's only a week away.
Getting very close.
So
spread the word.
And if you could just pick that up. And social media, we send out all first notification of all of the podcasts being downloaded via Facebook, via Twitter, via Instagram, via all of those social media outlets. We've got a YouTube channel, Ben, where we've put up all our videos.
We do, and there's more videos to come.
So feel free to go and do that for us as well. We are asking that favour and we certainly would appreciate that. Now, Ben, I've got to ask you, have you done any research in terms of your sign-off for the week?
Oh, yeah, but how do you pronounce that? I mean, I'm just sort of looking at it now. Before we do, though, there's also the video on the negative gearing that I've shot.
Ah, yes,
so
good point.
Up on our website will be the video on the negative gearing. That's just basically unpacks it a little bit more for those who want to get the baseline understanding of it. So that'll be up on the website in a couple of days, hopefully. Maybe earlier if Ivis, our genius who's behind the scenes here, puts it together for us. So how do you pronounce a goodbye in Greek?
I don't know, mate. That's, does that look like Antio?
Antio.
All right. We've practiced. So there you go, folks. Another week. The great negative gearing bait. Great negative gearing debate. And until next week, Ben.
Antio.
See you, folks.
It's like
the same
Greek to you.
It's not Greek to me, but it all works.
See you, folks, next week.
Bye.